This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
What'd you call Mike Tyson? Did you say like borderline crazy or what did you say a second ago?
Maybe borderline. I wouldn't say that he's dangerous currently, but right. He certainly has led a very, very interesting life. And you go back to when he's a kid in the Catskills and he has an unbelievable knowledge of the history of boxing and Customato, and he comes up and he's maybe the best heavyweight anyone had ever seen. And then he had Robin Givens as a wife and got into some domestic violence with her.
Don't forget what he did to her, yes.
And then he went to prison for rape, and then he comes out and he kind of remakes himself. And one thing that's a pet peeve of mine, I'm just going to say it, when you appear in a movie as yourself, that's not acting. So when people call Mike Tyson an actor, when you are Mike Tyson in The Hangover, you're not acting.
That's a good point.
You're Mike Tyson in a movie with a tiger. Anyway, he was able to, unlike anyone, and I mean, O.J. Simpson kind of made inroads to that end as far as remaking an image, but think about Mike Tyson and the way he was able to remake his image from, you know, convicted felon to now he's a lovable figure.
I mean, we're open to this.
We are
in our society. I don't want to get serious, but we're open to this.
Yep.
I mean, look at who just got elected president. We are. I know you don't want to hear this.
70 million votes.
We're okay with people who do really, really bad crap. We're okay with it. We are often okay that sending the message that absolutely deplorable behavior is okay, .. as long as you fill in other blank. Make me money, entertain me,
sure,
etc.
Lower the price of eggs.
That's just the truth. It's just the truth. By the way, Tyson's making half what Jake Paul's making.
Okay.
Tyson's making 20.
All right.
Jake's making 40.
What? And that, honestly, that makes a lot of sense because Jake Paul is...
Well, he's the bigger driver to Netflix.
He is,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
A bigger driver to younger people. And if you're Mike and it's 20 million, even if... And I love the interview he did with the 13-year-old.
We have it.
Okay, and are you going to play it? Because
yeah.
I thought it was fascinating, and put aside the fact that he's...
That's one word for it.
Well, it was fascinating.
It's terrifying.
Well, his answer, I believe, is one of the most honest and revealing answers anyone has ever given about the idea of legacy.
That's fair. What bothers me about it is not what he said, it's who he said it to. Like the understanding that you're speaking to a 13-year-old girl what makes it so sort of jarring. I'd also like to point out as a broadcaster that what the 13-year-old girl did was absolute next level stuff.
Totally.
I don't even know how. I know a lot of broadcasters who've been doing it for 50 years who would not have been able to handle the answer the way she did. Have you all heard this? And I don't even know, like, what's the background of this interview? Why is this happening?
I don't know how she got the interview, but she's just interviewing him in advance of the fight.
And I think I've heard she interviews a lot of, you know, social media stars or whatever. I wish we could get her name. But anyway, this is making the rounds on social media. It's a 13-year-old girl who got an interview with Mike Tyson and is talking about tonight's event. And listen to how this unfolds.
Well, in your return to the ring for this fight, you are setting a monumental opportunity for kids my age to see the legend, Mike Tyson, in the ring for the first time. So after such a successful career, what type of legacy would you like to leave behind when it's all said and done?
Man, I don't know. I don't believe in the word legacy. I just think that's another word for ego. Legacy doesn't mean nothing. That's just some word everybody grabbed onto. Someone said that word and everyone grabbed on the word, so now it's used every 5 seconds. It means absolutely nothing to me. I'm just passing through. I'm going to die and it's going to be over. Who cares about legacy after that? What a big ego. So I'm going to die. I want people to think that I'm this. I'm great. No, we're nothing. We're just dead. We're dust. We're absolutely nothing. Our legacy is nothing.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. That is something that I have not heard before, someone say that as an answer.
Can you really imagine somebody say, I want my legacy to be this way when I... You're dead. Why do you want somebody...
True.
You think somebody really wants to think about you? How... What's the audacity? I think, I want people to think about me when I'm gone. Who the f*** cares about me when I'm gone? Well, my kids, maybe, or grandkids.
Yeah,
or
true.
Lucas, what's her name? What's her name?
Jazlyn Guerra, she's 14.
Jazlyn Guerra, she's 14 years old.
Jazzy's World TV on YouTube, 743,000 subscribers.
Good for her.
And, yeah, she hung in there, and she had a follow-up.
Thank you. Thank you very much for sharing that. I've never heard someone answer it that way before.
I've never heard that either.
That's phenomenal.
The idea of legacy as ego. Because what he's saying is, legacy is nothing more than people thinking that what they did actually mattered. Now, I think that might be a little too harsh, because you can leave a legacy.
Yes.
You can leave positive things behind that people want to emulate and the rest of it. But his cold take on his own life, when I die, I'm going to be dust and no one's going to care except maybe my kids and my grandkids. Legacy is ego. That idea, I do think that there's something there.
There's probably something there if you care about it. I mean, I think someone's legacy is for everybody else. It's like the only flaw there in the conversation is that you're like someone's. It's not for Mike to answer. It's for everybody else. Everybody right. else has to answer. What's your legacy? How does what you did matter to you? What inspiration did you leave behind? What have you? So I respect the answer from that perspective. I would be like, I don't know, Mike, 14-year-old girl, could you play along a little bit and not freak her out? Like, but
I don't think she was freaked out at all.
She wasn't. She handled it beautifully.
Yeah. And obviously she's done a lot of this, 742,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Freaking maniac.
This is not her first rodeo, so.
Total maniac.
I thought the answer was.
Thank you very much. I've never heard someone answer it that way.
Nor have I. And I probably would have said, oh, excuse me, Mike, I'm going to need a moment here. I'm kind of scared. But she, I mean, stepped right into it.
I want to go to Bobby, but be ready to answer this. Okay. What's the most intimidating interview moment you've ever had? Let's go to Bobby in Los Altos. Hey, Bobby, what are you doing?
Hey, guys, happy Friday.
You too.
I want to say that in my lifetime, I've only been to like two boxing parties. One was actually Tyson Holyfield and then Pacquiao Mayweather.
Yeah.
So actually tonight, a bunch of my friends are having a little get together. I have zero interest in this event, but I will say not based on any research, I'm kind of sad because listening to you guys, I feel like I need to cape up for Jake Paul here. And the reason I say that is I feel like you guys are being a little unfair to him. He actually has done, and again, it's not based on any research, but things I've read over whatever, multiple years. But he's had quite a few boxing matches. So if there's anyone that is more of a boxer, it is probably Jake Paul than Mike Tyson at this point. And I believe he has his own promotion company. So the person with all the juice is Jake Paul. I think Tyson should be lucky that he was involved with this and hanging on and getting some profit from it. So I don't think it's Tyson driving this. I think it's Jake Paul that's making this happen economically for Mike Tyson. That being said, I wanted Tyson to win, but after hearing that little interview, I'm going to have to root for Jake Paul. I'm the same age as Dibs, except, you know, I don't have a 2-year-old, but
you're not crazy.
You could.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that I know of, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
Bobby, we got to run. Wrap it up real quick.
Okay. So I'll just say this. I mean, you said it perfectly. Legacy is what you leave behind to make the world better after you leave. it's not about self-promotion. So the fact that he says that means that really he has left nothing. The world is not going to be any better because of Mike Tyson.
Well, yeah. I mean, that is certainly a perspective. There's no doubt, by the way. I don't disagree with what he's saying, that Jake Paul is the financial driver here. That's why he's making twice as much. That's pretty obvious. I'd love to hear you answer that question, though, coming up next.
Okay.
Like, what has been your most intimidating interview situation in your life? Also, we can get to this Kuminga text that got everybody going, at least on our thread earlier today. We're sponsored by Lucky California. This is Weathered and Dibs.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, so what is it? Most intimidating interview situation you've ever encountered in your career?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
It was.
Is there anybody else in the room?
No.
Okay.
I just wanted to, you know, make sure that the audience felt like they were a part of it in case there's other interviewers out there and you wanted to weigh in with your answer. But for me, it's a pretty easy one. It was at the Super Bowl about maybe 14, 15 years ago. And I had a chance to interview Jim Brown, the late, great Jim Brown, and a very intimidating presence. And he was walking into Radio Row at the Super Bowl back when that was a thing. And when you have a big time guest like that and they walk in the room, you get every other radio station immediately scurrying over to see if they can get some time with him. And the great radio media handler, Jimmy Shapiro, was the one who set it up. You know, and of course, in typical Jimmy fashion, I had to do two other interviews of people no one had ever heard of in order to get the Jim Brown. So you eat two to get one. And, you know, it's a classic two for one in the NBA where two bad ones to get a good one. And Jim Brown walks in the room and he walked right over to my little table and you've got 15 or 20 people huddled around. And it was Jim Brown and myself for about 7 minutes. And pretty intimidating. You know, this is a guy who's done a lot in his life, mostly positive, some negative. He had lived a life of excellence and some controversy. And so, you know, you're sitting across from this man and you've got about 5 to 7 minutes to ask him, you know, the appropriate questions. You don't want to obviously grill him too much about 50 years ago, but there are things that you want to get to. And I was a little shook.
How'd it go?
It went okay. I mean, it's one of those ones where, you know, you have your four questions written down and you're thinking about a follow-up and then you look up and the handler is giving you the wrap it up. In other words, get to the pitch. And it's, you know, then the last question is, tell me about Ed shaving gel, Jim, or whatever the pitch was, you know. Tell me about Norelco, you know, and he does his 30 seconds and that was it. But that was one of the ones where I was really nervous.
That makes sense. It was just you?
Just
solo?
Me, yeah.
Okay.
Solo. Yeah,
that's a lot.
And it was an off-air thing that was going to get played back later. And so it was
okay,
just
well, that's better.
A little bit.
That's a little easier.
But still, I mean, as you know, whenever you record something, you want it to feel live. And when it's Jim Brown, it definitely feels live.
Text line is asking that why you didn't pick the one for the thumb interview.
Because that wasn't really an interview, and
if
I wasn't.
Things go your way, we'll see you back here. One for the thumb, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't need one. I only got four fingers, so I'm good.
And that is gold.
That is actually really an interview. There's There's no other way to describe that.
Yes.
It's you on the field talking to a winning coach and asking him questions.
That is true, but the backdrop of that is in the state championship games, there are usually four games, and so you do four of those, and I was actually doing the trophy presentation, and after you present the trophy, the industry standard, and you know this, is two questions.
Yeah.
You give them one, you get it back, you give them another, you get it back, and you throw it back. In this case, it was Steve Quiss out of L.A. I don't know if you know Steve.
I don't know Steve.
L.A. broadcaster forever.
Yeah, but yeah.
In this moment, Grandy, what I did is I broke one of the cardinal rules. I went back for a third question. And you, Grandy, just played
number three,
which it wasn't even much of a question.
I mean, if things go your way, we'll see you back here. One for the thumb, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't need one. I only got four fingers, so I'm good.
And as he says it,
the only question,
he holds up his hand on which there are literally four fingers. And you see me on the video.
I'm not gonna lie about that.
I'm holding the mic, and I'm holding it for him. And you see my eyes go down to his hand, and I look up. And then my eyes go down to the hand, and I look up again, and I go, well, yeah, Steve, there you hear it. Four titles and four fingers. Back to you, Steve. And he, at this point, the play-by-play guy, he can't even contain the laughter. He's laughing so hard because he sees all this on the monitor, and he knows that I just, I mean, I stepped in it. And
yeah, your only question was, huh?
Right.
Like, it wasn't even a question awful. Until you threw that in at the end.
It was terrible.
Yes, it's so one for the thumb.
I get home, and I'm just racking my brain because
one for the thumb, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
The best part is yeah. And so I go home, and I'm poring over my notes to see if there's something I miss, and I'm on the internet like, how could I have not known this? And I find an article from the Modesto Bee from about 6 years earlier that tells the story of him losing his thumb in a woodworking accident.
I should have known. I would argue, how could you have known that?
How could I not have known? If I would have done my homework.
What kind of research are you doing for a game like this? You're going back 4 years for woodworking accidents.
Well, you're
going
to Google the coach, Roger Canepa. Great guy, by the way. Although
sounds
that,
like it.
That did end my TV career.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've had a gig since. And that's got to be now 10 years back. And yet that clip somehow made it over from building to building.
It's amazing how that works out.
Yeah.
Huh?
Anyway.
Speaking of it being amazing how things work out, you would never have guessed that this text message was going to start a damn fire.
I had no idea.
Okay. First of all, Matt Barrow is going to join us in 20 minutes. And also want to let everyone know that all guests, like Matt, on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands, and Lathrop? It's Willard and Dibs. 888-957-9570 is the number. We had mentioned it earlier. If you're brand new to the show, if you're poking around on Bay Area Sports Radio, checking out new things these hours for the first time, hello and welcome. We plan to do everything we can to keep you here. You sent a text that you thought was going to be innocuous.
Completely.
You thought it was just going to be a little, nice little, just throw it up into the air. Like a little cupcake. And it started something, even though you didn't really have anything to do with the follow-up. But I'd love for you to sort of explain to people the background of why you're thinking this. Because we all, as a group, we talk things out throughout the morning and whatnot. This is hitting me. That's hitting me. Why don't we talk about this? Did you see that over there? We do that all morning long every day. It's a preparation sensation. And you texted.
Cha-ching!
Thank you, Mark. At exactly 10 o'clock this morning,
yep.
You said, Kuminga could be sixth man of the year. They, meaning the Warriors, should be beating that drum as a way to make him feel good about the move. And the move is referring to him not starting anymore.
Right.
Being on the bench. All right. Explain yourself.
I will explain it, and I will explain it and justify it to the extent that this was a very brief and terse text, which was going to lead to a bigger conversation. Mm-hmm. And for me, him going to the bench is something that could be uncomfortable for a player in a contract year, Jonathan Kuminga, who wants to play a lot, score a lot, do a lot, and get that bag. I think all those things are fair to say that he wants. Jonathan Kuminga is a player who, in the past, when things haven't gone his way, vis-a-vis going from the starting lineup to a bench role, he hasn't necessarily handled it openly, publicly, privately, in a very mature fashion. And then I looked at it from this standpoint, where he is a great sixth man. Since he's gone to the bench, he's averaging almost 18 points a game. I'm looking at the odds right now. According to FanDuel, he is at 15-1, which puts him as the fifth best odds to win sixth man of the year. And I also think about this from the Warriors standpoint, where Raymond Ritter, the best in the business in PR, we know this.
Yes.
And we know that the Warriors are not shy about certain campaigns, such as, hey, everybody, we want to tip our cap to Clay when he comes back. They got ahead of it. We had Brendan Schneider on. We talked about it. We got hats. We helped to get everybody on board. They are really good at these sorts of campaigns. So you have a player who might be a little sensitive coming off the bench. You have a player doing great coming off the bench. And you have a wonderful PR arm that tends to get ahead of the curve on these things. So I thought, not so much like we need to wrap our arms around Jonathan, but this would be a good thing for a young player to start to hear this as a thing. Like, Jonathan Kuminga, he might be the best sixth man in the league. And the undertone of that is, hey, Jonathan, you're really good at this. And Steve Kerr has said it. And Jonathan himself is probably seeing this is good. And if we added this extra layer to it, I felt like that might be a good way. If we started to beat this drum, this might be a good way for him to more embrace this new role.
So here's why this bothers me.
Okay.
And you wouldn't think so.
Did I explain that properly?
You did great. You did great.
Because I didn't have time to text all that. I was getting in the car for an hour drive.
Perfect. And what got hot, just to let the listeners know, is you know, I kind of, my immediate response was, that's interesting. Why do you think they need to stroke Jonathan's ego? And then you went off to do a podcast, and Grandy jumped in and kind of took your place, I guess, if you will.
First time ever he had my back,
because
which was kind of cool.
Yeah, he really
don't
was
get
like,
used to it.
Yeah, he's like,
I don't love Mark Grandy, but I respect him.
Yeah, well, it's Friday. We'll see. Ask again at 6.
But it's early.
Anyway, he kind of took up for like, what's so bad about this? And the quick answer is nothing. This is not an offensive thing that you're saying. And I want to also get this out front of the conversation. Jonathan's doing really well, especially off the bench. Jonathan is averaging over 17 a game off of the bench in 8 games. That's a very small sample, but that's great. And Jonathan also has not publicly complained, and that is also great. So this is a hypothetical conversation that we're having, and I really hope that none of it sounds like I am in any way being critical of Jonathan Kuminga, because I'm not. He's doing all the right things. Your suggestion, though, is that the Warriors start a drumbeat for Sixth Man of the Year, and it bothers me because it's too soon. That's why it bothers me. And I would love, if we could, for once in our lives, could we let Jonathan Kuminga earn something, as opposed to what I keep hearing, which is wanting to give him things that he has not earned yet? I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Have the courage to let Kuminga earn it. Like, look at his career arc in 4 years. So many of you wanted Steve Kerr to play him when it wasn't the right thing to play him. Oh, Mark, come on, develop the young people. It's not like they're going to, oops, they won a championship. Why do we need to give him a starting spot before he's earned it? Why do we need to give him 30 minutes a night before he's earned it? Now we get to this year. We got to give him a contract before he's earned it. And now we want to start a drumbeat for sixth man of the year, .. before he's earned it. That's all I'm saying. The only thing that bothers me about this is the order. It's just the order. And I think it's a bad message for a young player and for other young players that if you do have your agent call shams or whatever, you can start to sort of like create a path for yourself, which is, well, I'm sensitive and I want a lot of money. So now you as an organization, you should start doing things. You should start bending over backward. You should give me minutes I haven't earned. You should give me money I haven't earned. And if I haven't earned, then if you're not going to give me the money yet, well, then at least let's campaign for an award that I wasn't even thought of to be eligible for until 8 games ago when you made a move to send me to the bench, which was clearly the right thing to do. Your team is 9-2. You guys are awesome. This is all working. Everybody else is super happy and not saying a damn word about their roles. And by the way, he's done a great job of not saying anything about his. I don't have any problem if he wins sixth man of the year, but that's organic. Like, to me...
Well, nothing's organic when it comes to this.
No, but he'll earn it. Like, there's plenty of time come January to start, as you say, a drumbeat, if indeed Jonathan is like... averaging 18 points a night off of the bench.
Yep, 17.3 right now.
Plenty of time, 14.7 overall.
Yep.
There's plenty of time for that. I just don't understand why so many people want to hand Jonathan things before he's earned them because there's some sort of fear that Jonathan's going to be upset.
Yeah, I don't think that we're handing it to him. It's just a simple drum beat. And, you know, I'm not saying we need to print out flyers and we need to call every voter and openly campaign. I just thought that it was an interesting idea. And then I looked at the odds and I see him fifth in the odds. Mm-hmm. And actually, the text I should have sent is what I was thinking also, which is this might be my best bet right now at 18-1. And if you look at a team...
That's interesting to me.
This team is good. And if this team has a good year, and this player does this as a sixth man, and has this kind of a year, there's value at 18-1 right now for him to be sixth man of the year.
I agree with that.
Maybe me calling for a drumbeat was a little bit hasty and misguided, and I see that part of it, how you took it, but I also was just thinking about the Raymond Ritterification of this sort of thing where, you know, we will openly campaign for our rookies to be on the all-rookie team and for our defender to be DPOY, and we do these things. Maybe those players earned it more than this player, but I also think about the general sensitivity of Kuminga, and I, you know, Grandy, some of the things you actually were sharing on the thread, I was like, yeah, Grandy, because I'm in my car. And
I was like, no, Grandy.
Every time a text comes in, it goes, beep, beep, beep. Beep, beep, beep. And so I can read them on my car screen.
On the car screen, right.
So instead of ignore, I was hitting read, and then my car will read it like, and so I'm listening to every, and then beep, beep, beep. And so I'm like, my
on
whole
a group
thing.
That includes Lucas, Mark, and Mark. Mark said.
Well, what's funny is.
You wouldn't
is,
know which Mark.
And you wouldn't know what Lucas thought. And Lucas is great about this.
Lucas just waited.
No, he waits until he knows like where the majority is. Also, and then he piles on that side.
Also known as not paying attention to our thread because he, of course, has very, very important other things to
do. You know what I call him when I'm reading this?
What?
Late hit Luke. It's like the tackle's already happened, and then here comes Lucas on top of the pile to make sure he gets a piece of the tackle.
Grandy, what do you want to say?
Please. I was just going to ask, does it matter what Kuminga deserves if you think that a drumbeat for him for sixth man of the year makes him feel better and makes him more appreciative of his role and maybe makes him play a little looser and freer and that helps the team? Isn't that worth doing it even if you think Kuminga doesn't deserve it?
That's a lot of ifs, first of all. And I just, to me, it's a bad message. It's a bad message at the wrong time. I don't want the Golden, again, I have no problem with him winning the award. I have no problem with the Warriors campaigning for the award. I have a problem with the idea of them doing it now. because he has been on the bench for 8 games. Everything's going great, and nobody should have to placate anybody when you're 9-2. You don't owe anybody anything when you're 9-2. It's working, y'all are playing well, and you should trust that you're going to get paid what you deserved if you fit within a winning system and score a lot of points. That's the way it should be. So to me, it's a bad message to simply say, like, because earlier you guys were saying, well, everybody needs to be coached differently. I have no problem if Steve wants to do things behind the scenes with Jonathan that help if he is actually an overly sensitive guy. But sending the Warriors out to the streets to start talking about sixth man of the year before Thanksgiving, when Jonathan's only even done this for 8 games, to me, it's just a bad message, particularly because of where we've been with Jonathan. Let him earn it.
Yeah.
If he does 18 points a night for 2 months, now we're talking.
Well, that to me is an arbitrary time and an arbitrary level. And well, I think that
halfway through the season, when awards are starting to be talked about,
what Steve is already doing, I think, is priming the pump for this conversation when he talks about, you know, how great Jonathan's been off the bench and how much he likes Jonathan coming off the bench. I do think that they're already priming the pump for Jonathan. They're signaling that this is going to continue. So for me, this is just further signaling about just how good Jonathan has been off the bench. And, you know, maybe the next thing that's said is, you know, when you look around the league, he's one of the best bench players. He's one of the best guys coming off the bench in the league. And you slowly start to get to that point where, you know, the idea of a sixth man starts to get connected with Kuminga.
I mean, we do. 408 just texted in. Comcast Business Text Line, thank you for listening. Jonathan would hate that idea because he doesn't want to be the sixth man. Interesting perspective. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe. Let's go to Bob in Marin. Hey, Bob, thanks for calling. What's up?
Hey, I just want to say, Mark, you're completely right. I think he's got to earn the right. I think guys like Jordan Clarkson, Lou Williams, and Jamal Crawford, they didn't have to be coddled to be the sixth man of the year. They're always answering the bell. And this is a contract year for Kuminga, so he needs to forget about where he's starting, whether he's starting or he's coming off the bench. Play the game, go get yourself some money. So you don't need to coddle players to and prime them, as so to speak, to become the sixth man of the year. He's got to do his job, and he's got to earn the right to be the sixth man or in that contract.
Bob, thanks. I'll admit
bad examples.
Why?
Because those are veterans. This is a 22-year-old who is in a contract year, his first contract year. So you could talk about Jordan Clarkson, who's a veteran, and you could talk about all these other names you threw out. These are guys who've been there, gotten paid, and they're on the back nine of their career. This is Jonathan Kuminga, who needs to feel good about something in a contract year where he's trying to get that bag.
Yeah, see, I look at it exactly the opposite. Those are guys who have proven who they are and what they can do in the NBA. Again, I want to be very careful to say it this way. Jonathan has done publicly the right things. I just also know if you really, really follow Warrior basketball, there have been about 12 insiders who have already written that behind the scenes, Jonathan is not terribly pleased. So I don't know that to be true based on what we see in the public, and Jonathan deserves credit for that. If he is mad, he's kept it largely to himself, or at least to himself, Anthony Slater, Monty Poole, Tim Kawakami, we could go on. But they are in the know, and I don't think Jonathan loves this, and that's okay, as long as he still is a professional and goes and does his job. What gets me about it, though, is this idea that in the professional world, there starts to be a little bit of a chain link fence, one thing after another, where Jonathan, before being 20 points a night, or before being sixth man consistently for 2-3 months, or even back when he wasn't playing defense and wasn't rebounding, call shams. I should be starting. Based on what, dude? Based on what? You like? I know you're young. But what the Warriors are trying to teach Jonathan, I think, right now is how to be a professional. Not like how we can make you feel good because you want to be X even though we see you as Y.
But
that's all I'm talking about.
Yeah, I get that. But I do think part of coaching is coaching everyone differently and also putting your player in the best position to do what you want and do what he wants, which is play well. And maybe Jonathan Kuminga, hearing this sort of a drumbeat would make him feel better about the role and thus make him feel better about playing good basketball, as opposed to, geez, I need to start and get my minutes in order to eat.
We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Plenty of room to still talk this out, so 888-957-9570 is the number. We'll also get an update on exactly who's in, who's out, and what it means for the Niner game this weekend with our buddy Matt Barrows of The Athletic coming up next on Willard and Dibs.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
It's a great question.
That's a great question.
And that's a great question.
On 95.7 The Game.
It's kind of an interesting number. I wonder what Matt Barrows would think about it. You ever think of that? I wonder if you've thought of that. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to Willard and Dibs in the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your favorite podcast. While you're there, you can check out Kevon Looney. By the way, real quick before Matt Barrows joins, I'm mad at the way that this is written. And this is my stupid, petty problem.
Oh.
But they keep, check out the Odyssey app and you can check out the great interview with Kevon Looney. Surprising us basically on the Steiny and Guru show yesterday during the crossover.
Well, when did the interview start?
I don't remember. Did it start before 2 o'clock?
Yeah, it was like 1:50.
Yeah, we did the legal. Time to do the legal. We did it right in the middle.
Right, and so
time for the legal.
If you're looking for the interview, though,
it's our guest.
If you're looking for the interview, you would find it within the confines of Steiny and Guru. Thus, I stand behind the read.
But both, actually, because more of it was after 2 o'clock. Anyway, nobody cares about this. They want to hear about the 49ers from Matt Barrows, who is sitting on the River Islands guest line to talk it out from The Athletic. Hi, Matt. How are we doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We are hanging in there just fine. Thank you very much. But what about the Niners' health report? Can we just go through that right off the bat and start with, are there any big names that you think are actually in danger or missing this game?
I would put Trent Williams at the top of the list of the iffies. You know, he's the most iffy of the questionable guys. There are a few guys who are out. Charvarius Ward is out. Kevin Givens is out. Mitch Wishnowsky is out with a back injury. We're going to have a new punter here for at least the next 3 weeks. But among the questionable guys, sort of the big name guys, there's three guys who are questionable. Trent Williams, Nick Bosa, and George Kittle. I would put Williams as the most iffy, Bosa as the second most iffy, but probably is going to play, and I'm fairly certain that George Kittle is going to play. He practiced at least on a limited basis the last 2 days.
Just real quick on the punter, I know it's not the sexiest of topics, but they've been really bad, and it looks like Mitch has been a little bit down this year on overall length of kick and hang time. Is it fair to attribute this to a back injury that's lingered all year?
Yeah, this has been happening since the summer. If you're a punting aficionado, you probably have picked up on this, but he just doesn't look like himself. And the 49ers were having all sorts of kickoff issues at various points this season, and he did not kind of step in and take that over, which also kind of speaks to him not being 100%. But Pat O'Donnell will be the next, will be the new kicker for at least 3 weeks. Sort of a mathematics issue, because if Wishnowsky goes on IR, which he's expected to do tomorrow, he has to miss 4 games, and they can bump Pat O'Donnell up from the practice squad for 3 games. So it leaves a bit of a question about what they're going to do for that 4th game. But probably if O'Donnell plays well, then he'll just get elevated permanently to the active roster for at least a little while that back issue is taken care of. But O'Donnell's interesting because he's kicked in Chicago for a long time. He kicked in Green Bay in 2022. And, it's one thing to punt in those situations, but he's also going to be serving as the holder. And you've got Jake Moody coming off a very rocky performance in Tampa Bay. He's about to go up to Green Bay and then the next week to Buffalo, and really could use a veteran holder to sort of kind of walking through the wind and, you know, what's happening with the swirling in Green Bay and things like that. So I think that's exactly why, out of all the available punters, O'Donnell was the one that they tapped.
Matt, let's go even deeper into just special teams as a whole. What are they doing about it? The group has been awful. What are they doing about it?
I mean, I don't know what to tell you. This has been a problem for a long time now, and they really haven't done anything about it. Nothing is the answer. They're just sort of staying the course.
Which is a little scary when you look at how bad they've been, and forget the field goal kicking woes. I do think that was just maybe a one-off, hopefully, but the punt coverage, the kick coverage, and I'm thinking about Laviska Shenault and his 97-yard kick return for a touchdown, which was kind of a stunning way that game turned around. So as you look at this going forward, is it personnel things? I know that Daryl Luter Jr. is doubtful, so if he doesn't play, who's going to be there to mess up punt returns?
That's a great question. Luter being the guy who was right smack dab in the middle of things in the Super Bowl as well, if you'll recall that punt hitting the back of his leg. I actually didn't think that Luter was the main guy to blame there. Remember, Ray McLeod tried to pick up that punt and run with it when he really should have just pounced on the ball and secured it. So I always felt like that was the bigger error. But now that Luter has done kind of similar things, in a different game, maybe I'm rethinking that. But you're right. I mean, the issue is that you are, when you're an injured team like the 49ers are, you're constantly moving new guys from special teams up into the starting lineup. And so it's a constant rotation of guys, first of all, and then you're putting some players there who just don't have a lot of background on special teams. But that's what happens, you know, in 32 different cities as well. And the 49ers seem to be the team that just can't handle that. So, like I said, they were not a special teams unit last year or the year before that.
Right.
Or the year before that. So this has been a long-running issue. They got rid of their special teams coordinator a few years ago. They replaced him with somebody who had a lot of clout around the league. But, overall, the special teams did not get better. And they're certainly not a special teams that, gives you a little something extra. I know they had the Diamador Lenore block punt for a touchdown. That's the exception. But this is not a team that usually gives you strong returns, certainly no touchdowns in the last few years. It's just bad things. It's things that allow the opponent to crawl back into the game. I mean, I thought that, the difference between last year coming out of the bye, the 49ers went to Jacksonville. And, at halftime in Jacksonville, the score was, I think it was 13-3. Or it might have been 13-10. I forget what it was. But then in the second half, the 49ers just blew the doors off the Jaguars. And the Jaguars were a good team at that point. They were 6-2. They were coming off their own bye. And I really thought a similar thing was going to happen in Tampa. It took to Florida. It was almost 13-3 at halftime, but Jake Moody missed a field goal. And then in the second half, you had the special teams miscue on the punt return, and that allowed the Buccaneers back into the game. And it became a game like the Seahawks game that you just referenced, like the game in Los Angeles that they lost, just allowing the team a way to crawl back into the game and then losing all momentum because of special teams. You would think that, it'd be a five-alarm situation right now, but apparently it's not.
Matt Barrows, The Athletic, with us here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. I mean, Matt, you've watched so many of these teams, and I get where they've been recently, so maybe that's why our expectations are where they are, but if you just look at these nine games that they've played, do you feel like you're looking at a contender, a true contender?
No, I don't, and that was the takeaway from the Buccaneers game, and the first nine games. I mean, Maybe for a quarter against Dallas, that third quarter, you could argue that this is, you know, this is one of the top teams in the NFC. This is a team that could go to the Super Bowl. It was just a tease. I mean, they were bad in the fourth quarter of that game, and then the Tampa game was like a lot of the other games this season. So no, they haven't shown yet that they're a champion caliber team. There are circumstances that contribute to that, one of which was no Christian McCaffrey, and he said after the Buccaneers game that, yeah, I felt good in this game, but I'm certainly not 100% of myself. So my point being is that there's still kind of this waiting for the 49ers to show up happening here, and it's still possible because of McCaffrey. And because of some of these other guys that are starting to perform.
And also part of it, too, just where their division is, where, you know, Arizona looks better than perhaps we thought, but they still have three games against each of those teams. And it may feel still like the 49ers have their own destiny in their hands. Is it looking at 5-4, not quite the full picture, knowing that they have a chance to control their own destiny?
Yeah, I think Sunday's game will go, a little bit further to clarifying the picture. And Fred Warner's point after the Tampa game is that he just needs a shot. They just need to be in it at the end. They can get hot at any point. I mean, the Cowboys game did show that this team can get hot. And when they get hot, they look really, really good. So as long as you're still kind of giving yourself a chance to have that heat up period. And I think that they will. I mean, it's just such a veteran team. And they've done it in the past. That all suggests that they will finally kind of figure it out and slip out of this funk. The argument against that is that, you know, they're also an exhausted team, a team that went deep into the playoffs these last few years, a team that's been beat up this season. They were really beat up over the first eight games, and they've got nine more games or following the bye. They had nine more games, and it's the rougher half of the schedule. It's more road trips. It's a lot of road trips to the East Coast. It's a lot of primetime games, 10 o'clock start here and there. So it's a more challenging schedule in the back half than it was in the first half. That's the argument against them suddenly waking up and getting hot.
Matt, great stuff. Here we go into that stretch in November where Kyle is so good. But, yep, the schedule's harder. So we'll see, my man. Thank you very much for coming on.
All right. Anytime, guys. Talk to you soon.
Okay, there it is. Matt Barrows, The Athletic, Niners and Seahawks this weekend. And what we like to call an FTD is around the bend. In fact, I mean, you want to just do it?
Yeah, pick is in.
I mean, I could tell you that you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HC1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.